Welcome back. It's a Friday, the third day of April, 2020. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and once again, it's been quite a week. We've got the biggest economic meltdown in history, still in progress, really just building up ahead of steam. And, of course, along with it, the biggest move towards a totalitarian, now global, police state, arguably in history as well. Well, let's kind of kick things off with a representative story or two to set the stage. This first one comes from Euronews. And just the headline gets it. It says, more than half of the human race at this point, thanks to Thailand, which just announced their lockdown, that would be 3.9 billion people on planet Earth, and that's more than 90 countries, are now under lockdown. Talk about a globalist. Gee, here is a great crisis they didn't let go to waste. There you go. And furthermore, 90% of formerly free Americans are now octung under some kind of lockdown. Is it going to get worse? Oh, yeah, folks. Since when have you ever seen the deep state release its talons once they get a good grip and start drawing blood? Now, this story is almost funny by comparison, but it does illustrate the economic point. Ready for this? Hollywood is taking it on the chin. U.S. box office sales, compared to the same week in March a year ago, were down, well, let's just call it 100% with round-off error, actually down about 99.5%, but that's close enough to all of it. 1 year ago, same week at the end of March, box office revenues, you know, movie theaters, were $204,193,406. This week, the week from March 20th through 26th, $5,179. Now, that's $5,000 with a T dollars. You know what, folks? That won't even buy the replacement batteries for used politically correct California Prius. And you got to figure that's going to impact some mansion payments in the Hollywood Hills. So maybe there is some good news in all of this, along with the really nasty news. But that kind of sets the stage. From there, I guess we'll go on to some of the big but not really surprising economic news. The U.S. labor market is in free fall, said a piece from Tyler Durden at Zero Hedge on Thursday. 10 million Americans have now filed for unemployment in the past 2 weeks. And after last week's unprecedented 3.3 million person surge in initial jobless claims, this week's is even more unprecedented-er, adding a stunning 6.65 million, i.e. twice as bad as the previous record, for a two-week sum of 10 million Americans now out of work and claiming unemployment benefits. And for a bunch of obvious reasons, that number almost certainly underestimates the real total. Here's an interesting statistic, courtesy of @GreekFire. We've now lost 46 jobs in formerly free America for every confirmed case of COVID-19 in the country. And if you're wondering where the job losses are congregated, think more tyranny, more destruction. California, of course, heads the list, followed by Pennsylvania, New York, Michigan, and New Jersey. This is simply stunning, said Tyler Durden, and said Gregory Dacko, chief U.S. economist at Oxford Economics in New York, the U.S. labor market is in free fall. The prospect of more stringent lockdown measures and the fact that many states have not yet been able to process the full amount of jobless claim applications suggests the worst is still to come. And as UBS notes, it's important to remember that weekly jobless claims data are actually based on what they call hard facts, unlike survey data, which is subject to various statistical quirks. A business economics professor named Sun Wong Son at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles seems to ask the proper socialist question, why bother to work when, quote, one is better off not working, both financially and health-wise, unquote. And notes Zero Hedge, with more than 80% of Americans still under some form of lockdown, up from less than half just a couple of weeks ago, but in a whole different and much freer universe, all of this is far from over. And of course, as we know, folks, if you can look back at the Anti-Terror Act after the Oklahoma City false flag bombing, followed up by 9/11, of course, and the unconstitutional as-you-know-what Patriot Act, you know that the worst is yet to come and that what we do get now in the form of tyrannical measures to fix a problem that Big Brother basically, one way or another, not only started but exacerbated, the worst of this is never likely to go away. Which leads the wags writing as Tyler Durden to make one more critical point. Erosion in employment will almost certainly lead to a sharp deceleration in economic and consumer confidence, as was seen earlier in the week with the release of the Conference Board's Consumer Confidence Index, which plunged to 120 in March, down from 132.6. And all of this is a critical point, they say, because consumer confidence is the primary factor when it comes to consumptive behaviors, which is basically what the U.S. economy is now based on. And it's why the Federal Reserve and its big brother partners acted so quickly to print new money and inject liquidity into the financial markets. So while the Fed's actions may prop up the financial markets with a new money sugar high in the short term, it does little to affect the most significant factor weighing on consumers longer term, and that would be their jobs. Basically, they say, if you're still betting on a V-shaped or fast economic recovery, I wouldn't. Oh, and there's this, too. In spite of all the happy talk from Snowflake, seemingly thrilled with what they're calling the boomer doomer, i.e. the COVID-19 attack hitting most seriously, primarily on older Americans, or baby boomers, the group that's likely to be hardest hit when it comes to real unemployment are those between 25 and up to 54 years of age. Because with more than 15 million restaurant workers so far having been terminated, along with retail, clerical, leisure, and hospitality workers, the damage to that demographic will almost certainly be the heaviest. I guess I could put it somewhat bluntly, folks, and say, surprise, totalitarian socialism is a snowflake doomer as well, and there's no safe place left to hide. The story concludes by noting that over the last several years, so-called investors have continued to insist that the markets were not in a bubble. Remember when Alan Greenspan said, you really can't tell a bubble until it pops. Maybe it helps, though, if you're economically illiterate, folks. Anyway, the story concludes with this, restating a statement made previously. Every financial crisis, market upheaval, major correction, recession, depression, etc., all came from one thing. An exogenous event that was not either forecast nor expected, which is why bear markets are always vicious, brutal, devastating, and fast. These exogenous events, usually credit-related, though, which suck the liquidity out of the markets, cause prices to plunge. And as prices fall, investors begin to panic sell, driving prices lower. It's called a vicious circle or positive feedback, folks, all of which forces more selling in the market until, ultimately, sellers don't have any more to sell or they simply are exhausted, and it's the same every time. And while it's been obvious to Austrian economists for a long time, as well as those who read the Bible, to those that have been most devastated by the shocking events of the last few weeks, they never saw it coming. And we've got more on the jackbooted march towards a police state as well, where all around the country, socialist mayors and governors are implementing the most draconian rules. Says a piece from J.D. Hayes at Natural News, in response, at least that's what we're told, to the coronavirus outbreak, and in addition to deeming which businesses are essential because only they get to pick, and which are not, they're restricting movement, denying people the once constitutionally protected right to assemble, and forbidding the faithful from attending religious services. Yeah, also once constitutionally protected. But now one of them, the mayor of the District of Criminals, Muriel Bowser, is going a step further. As reported by the New York Post, she threatened swamp residents there with a $5,000 fine and 90 days in jail if they're caught leaving their homes, Achtung, during her coronavirus lockdown order, outside of the limited exceptions that the swamp masters have deemed essential. And I guess maybe even the swamp isn't as bad as it could be. Word out of the Philippines is that the president there, Rodrigo Duterte, is ordering their military occupation forces to shoot lockdown violators on sight. Quote, do not challenge the government, he said. You will lose. Well, back to U.S. tyranny, where the Post further notes that residents and civil libertarians, I guess both of them there in the District of Criminals, are increasingly alarmed by the threat. Not just because it's utterly unconstitutional, but because at least five inmates at the city's 1,700 inmate jail near Capitol Hill have now tested positive for COVID-19. And in this case, ironically, the threat even got the attention of the White House, as Mercedes Schlapp, President Trump's former White House Director of Strategic Communications and advisor to his re-election campaign, tweeted, this is insane. Criminal penalties? While Monica Hopkins, ACLU Executive Director of the D.C. chapter, also told the Post that, quote, we would be deeply concerned if any residents were actually arrested and then fined or jailed under the order. You want to send them where, she asked? People being arrested for that causes all sorts of problems that are antithetical to the goals of lessening the virus, unquote. But here, folks, I think she falls victim to the assumption that the goal is as stated. In other words, to really lessen the virus, as opposed to never let a perfectly good crisis go to waste. And as God-given, constitutionally protected liberties are being abridged daily in the name of booga, 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 that perfectly good crisis, this story, courtesy of the National Sentinel, is certainly interesting. A pair of federal so-called judges have temporarily blocked governors in multiple states, Texas, Ohio, and Alabama, as it turns out, who've deemed abortions to be elective medical procedures from banning them for the very same reasons that they're banning travel, freedom to assemble, and even earn a living. Until the coronavirus emergency passes, these so-called judges have ruled that because abortion, as opposed to the right to keep and bear arms, speech, assembly, worship, and so on, in other words, as according to all those things actually in the Bill of Rights, has been deemed an absolute constitutional right by the Supreme Court, governors don't have the authority to ban them ever for any reason. So, said the National Sentinel, are we hearing this right? Governors can ban our constitutionally protected and guaranteed right to assembly. They can ban us from gathering together in our houses of worship. They can ban us from traveling freely throughout our states or our country. They can ban us from purchasing a gun as part of our once God-given constitutionally protected right to keep and bear arms for self-defense. All of these things are being implemented, we're told, to stop the spread of the virus. But what? They can't designate abortions as elective medical procedures and ban them even temporarily as a means of limiting the same virus's spread? If you recognize insanity when you see it, folks, you're among an increasingly rare breed, it would seem. And since it's now almost undeniable that there's a bigger agenda at work here than merely saving lives, let's take a tour next of the Conspiracy Corner, starting with who? The very same international Big Brother organization that helped China, it would seem, cover up just how bad the COVID-19 epidemic was, well, at least up until the point where it was too late to do anything about it, the die was cast and the hammer was ready to be dropped. Courtesy of Paul Joseph Watson via his Summit News and Tucker Carlson at Fox, who exposed during a powerful monologue Tuesday night how the World Health Organization, yeah, who, helped China cover up the severity of the coronavirus outbreak, and how the U.S. media complicitly turned a blind eye. Until, that is, it was time to stoke the panic. The Fox News host noted how the WHO whoremeister and Director General Tedros Adhanom, quote, got his job with Chinese support after he covered up cholera outbreaks in his home country of Egypt. Tedros, of course, has denied the allegation, which centered around claims he downplayed cholera epidemics in Ethiopia in 2006, 2009, and 2011 by passing them off as, quote, acute watery diarrhea, an obvious symptom of cholera. The UN later said that more lives could have been saved if the epidemic had been accurately labeled early on as what it was, cholera, whereupon Carlson then accused Adhanom of setting the standard for corruption within the WHO by congratulating Communist China for its speedy response to the coronavirus in late January, despite widespread evidence that China had covered up the outbreak for at least a month, lied about its severity, they may still be continuing to do that, and then silenced whistleblowers who tried to warn the world. Here's the clip.
The Chinese government is to be congratulated for the extraordinary measures it has taken to contain the outbreak. The speed with which China detected the outbreak, isolated the virus, sequenced the genome.
Oh, wait, quick aside here, folks. It's a lot faster if you already know what it is before you release it, isn't it?
The speed with which China detected the outbreak, isolated the virus, sequenced the genome, and shared it with WHO and the world are very impressive and beyond words.
Yeah, gotta admit, I listened to that and I'm speechless.
China is actually setting a new standard for outbreak response, and it's not an exaggeration.
And that new standard would make George Orwell proud. Quote, everything you just heard him say there was a lie, said Carlson, highlighting an Australian 60 Minutes piece which features an expert explaining how China knew human-to-human transmission of COVID-19 had happened back in December, probably exactly as it was designed to. Indeed, as of January the 14th, the WHO was still amplifying Chinese fake news that no human-to-human transmission of the coronavirus had occurred. Well, outside the lab, I guess. So, quote, the World Health Organization's leadership tells you that China set the standard for the response to the outbreak. Apparently, that standard includes disappearing doctors who tell the truth about it, unquote, said the Fox News host. Among them, Ai Fen, a doctor at the head of the emergency at Wuhan Central Hospital, who asserted that Beijing stopped her from warning the world, after which she was subsequently disappeared. And pointing out that U.S. media has completely failed to properly document China's cover-up of the COVID-19 outbreak, Tucker noted that even as of late mid-February, officials were seemingly more concerned with political correctness than the spread of the virus, saying, it's early February, the director of the WHO was still lecturing the public that using terms like Wuhan virus was racist, said Carlson, before playing this clip.
Having a name matters to prevent the use of other names that can be inaccurate or stigmatizing.
In which he asserted clearly that using the politically incorrect term for the Wuhan coronavirus was, quote, stigmatizing. Let's hear Tucker Carlson's conclusion.
You might think that a World Health Organization, a group that got 58 million of your tax dollars last year, might care that a government arrests doctors and lies about deadly new diseases. But no, like so many other organizations, they are lapdogs for the powerful, and that means their real job is sucking up to the Chinese government.
And whether this is an act of overt war or a treasonous sellout, it does look like the oh-so-well-planned Wuhan Revolution is underway in America. Yeah, with a K. And given the fact that there is so much evidence, which I've alluded to for quite a while, that all of this planned economic meltdown is happening right on schedule, I want to spend a few minutes at least summarizing a piece by Guido Taietti via GreatGameIndia.com, and also reprinted from Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge, entitled Chinese Biological Experiments, hey, what? Have we been talking about that? Could potentially be used to infect humans with a coronavirus. And all this was exposed all the way back in 2015 by Italian state media. 5 years ago, it says, Italian state-owned media company RAI, Radio Televisione Italiana, exposed dark efforts by China concerning viruses. The video was broadcast in November of 2015, and it showed how Chinese scientists were doing biological experiments on a SARS-connected virus, aka coronavirus, derived from bats and mice, and it asked whether or not it was worth the risk in order to be able to modify the virus for compatibility with human organisms. And what follows is a transcript from the Italian broadcast into English. Chinese scientists, it begins, have created a pulmonary supervirus from bats and mice, only though for study reasons, but of course there are some questionable scientific aspects to all of this. Is it worth the risk? Well, it's an experiment, they say, but it is worrisome. It even worries some scientists. A group of Chinese researchers attaching a protein taken from bats to the SARS virus, acute pneumonia, derived from mice. The output is a super coronavirus that could, they said, back in 2015, affect man. It remains closed in laboratories. Well, whew, that certainly is comforting, isn't it? And it's only for study purposes, but is it worth the risk, they asked then, creating such a great threat only, allegedly, for the purposes of examination. The debate about the risks of the research, of course, is as old as science itself, and they refer to the myth of Icarus, who plunged from the sky and perished because he got too close to the sun with wax wings. All right, let's cut to the chase. The experiment in China, in which a group of scientists managed to develop a chimera, an organism modified by attaching the surface protein of a coronavirus found in the bats of the common species, the great horseshoe bat, was attached to a virus that causes SARS in mice, although they say it was the non-fatal form. That sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? Precisely this molecule, called SHC-014, allows the coronavirus to attach itself to our respiratory cells and trigger the syndrome. And according to researchers, the two organisms, the original and even more so the bioengineered one, can now infect humans directly from bats without having to go through an intermediate species like the mouse. And that, of course, is a bit controversial. In 2014, the U.S. government allegedly suspended research funding to make viruses more contagious, but that didn't stop the work of the Chinese on SARS, which was already in advanced stages and looked, they say, relatively harmless. And guess what, folks? This story doesn't even mention the University of North Carolina connection through Chapel Hill and the Obama regime. So with that on the table, is it any surprise that honest Americans, at least where they're still allowed to by their slave masters, have decided to stock up on guns and ammo in preparation for what anybody who's not a big brother-loving screaming idiot can clearly see coming? from the Gateway Pundit, WUNC, Ryan Fournier, and industry research via Small Arms Analytics and Forecasting, gun sales in March exploded as the government pushed various forced lockdowns on the generally dumbed-down public, and retailers recorded 2.5 million sales in the month, a new record. Although, no, you certainly can't trust Big Brother's statistics, and there are still a few places in the formerly free United States, folks, where people can actually transfer guns as if they were free private property owners. But the story does say this. The federal bunglers of investigation, acting completely contrary to that Second Amendment thing, say they still nevertheless violated the rights of 3,740,688 people via background checks in their absolutely unconstitutional NICS Federal Gun Registry database during the month of March, over a million more than they did the previous March. And since there are a number of states that unconstitutionally run background checks before allowing their peons to even have a permit to keep and bear arms, there's yet another reason why the number of real gun sales doesn't correlate with their numbers. Said Jürgen Brauer, chief economist for industry research firm SAAF, or Small Arms Analytics and Forecasting, ordinarily will have a shock that will raise or lower the demand over several months, maybe a year, but not in a single month. So this, he said, is quite unprecedented, unquote. And I guess you'd have to say, even though it's a reaction to an unprecedented level of tyranny run amok, at least there should be some good news in there somewhere. And here then is a bit more, courtesy of Matt Agarest at the Free Thought Project, about how after citizens in another locale refused to obey, the sheriff there decided to reverse the tyrannical decision to close what were called non-essential, of course, gun stores. Obviously, it notes, Americans aren't yet dumbed down and conditioned enough to be disarmed. Even though in March the act of buying a gun in much of the tyrannical states became increasingly harder thanks to executive orders and so-called court rulings that shuttered gun stores from coast to coast, while liquor stores and fast food restaurants were deemed essential businesses and allowed to stay open, the peons just couldn't be allowed to actually purchase tools for self-defense, which created a bit of a storm of backlash against the state, especially in the People's Republic of California on the left coast. Los Angeles County Sheriff Alex Villanueva, and maybe that should be pronounced Villanuevo, issued an attack on the Second Amendment last week, ordering all gun stores to octung close their doors. And in a glaring case of doublespeak, says Agarest, the sheriff claimed removing the citizens' God-given constitutionally protected right to self-defense is, quote, about taking care of people, unquote. And obviously it depends on what taking care of them means.
I'm going to make them an offer they can't refuse.
Yeah, I can't help but think a lot of these folks are channeling Marlon Brando. And this after socialist governor there, Gavin Newsom, issued a list of businesses that were deemed important enough by the almighty state to be allowed to stay open. And obviously, they're not going to put gun stores on that list. But gun store owners are in many cases simply refusing to close and refusing to obey a bad law. This, coupled with a slew of lawsuits from gun rights advocacy groups, has forced the sheriff there to rethink his attack on gun stores. And on Friday, after four groups filed a federal lawsuit, contending, obviously, that the sheriff's actions violate the constitutionally protected right to keep and bear arms. As the AP put it, the sheriff says he's now heeding a federal Department of Octung Homeland Security advisor issued over the weekend that listed, imagine this, gun and ammunition dealers as essential critical infrastructure workers. So Big Brother taketh away, sometimes Big Brother giveth a little back. Especially when the peons learn to give as good as they get. I like this quote from David Chong, who owns AO Sword Firearms in El Cajon, California. We have no plans to close. We've not heard any lawful order to shut down, unquote. And he added, you got to be very careful not to get into a ridiculous situation, but hey, since when has that slowed Big Brother down, folks? When we're sterilizing the Second Amendment by saying, oh, you can keep and bear arms, you just can't acquire any. In New Jersey, though, their tyrant Governor Phil Murphy, a perfect example of hypocrisy, continues to mandate gun stores there be closed, in spite of that DHS edict to the contrary. Said the tyrant, quote, a safer society, for my taste, has fewer guns and not more guns, unquote. But since when did his taste have anything to do with his lying and putting his hand on a Bible to take an oath that the scumbag obviously had no intention of honoring in the first place? I guess I could say, for my taste, a free society would have a hell of a lot less Phil Murphys. And it's just too bad we no longer hold public officials accountable for treachery. Out of the second segment for this evening. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and I started off the show this evening by recapping some of the continuing moves towards a police state, while at the same time completing the demolition of a world economic system that was on schedule to fail anyway. So let's recap the progress there, starting with the multi-trillion dollar, hey, remember when that was once real money, Porculus bailout bill, which got signed as the week began, and at least for a while, dominated the news cycle. And while not all of it was discussed, purposely so, due to the complexity of the underlying math, in parallel to the Treasury's $2 trillion package, there was the unconstitutional Fed, which received a green light to lend up to $4.5 trillion in newly created money, which said Zero Hedge's summary was where the widely misconstrued $6 trillion stimulus number came from. And as usually happens with matters Fed, the fact that the Fed received permission from the Treasury to stimulate by more than twice the full amount of the so-called CARES Act flew right over the collectivist heads of dumbed-down America, which, while it's expected, notes Tyler Durden, is lamentable because all of that gives the Fed a green light to inject money at will. And the U.S. government has now officially launched helicopter money to infinity. Even Bloomberg's calling it a multi-trillion dollar helicopter credit drop. Which brings us to the key comment in this whole piece. J.P. Morgan's chief economist Michael Feroli put it this way, quote, "The Fed has effectively shifted from being a lender of last resort for banksters," that's your host term, of course, "to a commercial bankster of last resort for the broader economy." Here's how Zero Hedge, which has been right all along up until now, puts it. The punchline is that this mechanism is now codified by law, and it grants the Fed literally unlimited power to bail out anything and anyone. And that marks the beginning of the end, or maybe the end of the beginning, for the U.S. dollar. And it was delivered by American politicians with pride. As Senator Pat Toomey put it, quote, "Very quickly, we hope to stand up a very broad-based lending facility that could be leveraged up to $2 or $3 trillion. Hey, what's a trillion here and a trillion there, right? We're hoping it's a mechanism to keep businesses alive for a few weeks or months until our economy can resume," unquote. And hey, folks, one thing's for sure, don't hold your breath. The only thing that's truly sure to resume here is massive inflation. And as Tyler Durden summarized it, if the economy can't resume in a few weeks or months, the mechanisms, though, will keep running until the Fed can, and ultimately will, nationalize everything. Maybe they'll print up a T-shirt in the next bailout bill, and it'll say something to the effect of, "Hey, they stole everything I ever had, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt." And while they're getting trillions, you can look forward, folks, to your paltry $1,200 check, which by the time you get it, probably won't even buy lunch at a sit-down place, because there may not be any. And hey, before the ink was even dry on that story, we have this follow-up under the headline, "Fed launches repo facility to provide dollars to foreign central banksters." In other words, more monetization. Another item. The U.S. Mint has decided to shut down, at least temporarily, their West Point facility, which produces the American gold and silver Eagle coins that are currently the world's most often bought bullion products by retail sales volume. And that means that during the shutdown, no new U.S. Mint bullion coins, like the 2020 Silver Eagles, will be produced, and allocations of those products are now suspended indefinitely as well. Which is really kind of convenient if you think about it, since Big Brother doesn't want the American people to have anything like real gold and real silver as things get worse here anyway. And it also kind of eases up on the pressure for the Mint to lay hold of the real stuff too, doesn't it? which is how we'll segue next to the real world of real economics, and of course that means real money. Especially given what's going on and the attempts to destroy the world's economy, and we'll have to see what rises out of the ashes like a phoenix. I'm looking first at a piece from Clive Mon via GoldEagle.com under his weekly gold market update entitled "Breathtaking Reversal to the Upside." He means for the precious metal. Well, he begins, "It's an open question as to whether or not the coronavirus is a bioweapon created in some germ warfare laboratory." And truthfully, folks, there's a lot of evidence that it couldn't have happened without excellent, very careful engineering. And so then the question boils down to, was it strategically deployed or released by accident, or maybe even worse? But ponder this. If you were to set up a printing press in your backyard and churn out dollars, you might be able to live a life of luxury, doing nothing and living off the labor of others. And in a fiat money system, that's exactly, of course, what the Federal Reserve Bank of America and other central banksters around the world are doing, but on a vastly grander scale. Realize, though, if you try it yourself, you'll be summarily branded a counterfeiter and undoubtedly marched off to serve a lengthy jail term. But they manage to do it and get away scot-free. Furthermore, the more they do this, the more they like it, because it involves no effort on their part beyond reaching out to their keyboards and adding a few more zeros to the end of a number. And unless the money they create in this manner is gifted, as in the case of the paltry checks the new American serfs are eventually going to be sent as their furlough throughout this crisis, all of which is cynically calculated to stop them from reaching for their pitchforks and taking to the streets, well, the recipients of the money, or the counterparties, are then obligated to pay it back, or at least to try to service the debt, and as a result they become vassals or slaves of those same central banksters. And when you understand this, you comprehend that these central banks are the biggest parasites the world has ever known, and none more so than the Fed. So, what was the game over the past couple weeks, and especially last week, with the Fed intervening directly in the stock markets to generate that big reversal and try to get them moving back up? To understand this, you have to grasp that the Fed has a cozy relationship with Wall Street elites and the elites in various huge, powerful corporations who are their crony pals, or public-private partners, as your host likes to put it. So, just as back in 2008, the name of the game is to privatize the gains and socialize the losses. In other words, heads I win, tails you lose. When this is eventually pushed to the ultimate extreme and the whole thing breaks apart and comes crashing down, as we're seeing now, they then, in ritualistic fashion, go cap in hand to the Fed and say, oh, it wasn't our fault, not our years of corruption and mismanagement. It was the fault of that nasty, what they call it? Oh, yeah, coronavirus. And if you don't bail out thousands of workers, all of them will be out of a job. So, the Fed, of course, is only too happy to step in and help its pals out in the hour of their need, because it involves no effort on their part anyway, and the cost, someone has to pay, will be borne by society as a whole. Well, everybody outside of that 1%, or the 1% of 1% even, in the form of weakening currency and, of course, accelerating inflation, which is why they spirited trillions into existence just over the past couple of weeks to throw at the markets, and it's why the dollar suddenly took a nosedive. Now, the problem here, says Clive Mond, with regards to the Fed and the other central banksters and their attempts to, at least so we're told, save the world via their largesse, is that waving your arm gracefully over a keyboard to spirit a few trillion dollars more into existence out of nothing, listen to this carefully, folks, does not actually produce anything, and it will not stop the real-world economy from dying. But it does have other major value to the deep state and the puppet masters, outside even of the authoritarian police state they're building. And that's not only control, but outright ownership. Writes Mond, corporate earnings are cratering right now, and the bottom line earnings of many corporations are set literally to drop off the bottom of the page. But the Fed can attempt to goose stock prices by creating trillions of fiat dollars to throw at the market all it likes. It still won't alter the fact that production is collapsing. So this stance will rapidly become untenable as the flood of increasingly worthless dollars crashes the currency. And you know where he's headed, folks. There's one way to protect yourself. It's historic. It's been the case for literally 6,000 years or so, and that's real money in the form of what the Constitution once called gold and silver coin. Continues Clive Mond, holders of stock will increasingly call the Fed's bluff by selling into rallies so that eventually the Fed becomes the dominant holder of stocks, along with bonds, and this, of course, may be its ultimate objective anyway, to become the owner of the entire world. And in the meantime, until people are allowed to return to work, if Big Brother ever lets them, the state is being granted a golden opportunity to dry run its martial law techniques. They militarized the police some years back in the U.S. in preparation for just such an inevitability. From here, Clive Mond launches into the usual several pages of chart analysis and indications of what the market's doing and what might likely follow. But here's kind of the key paragraph. If the Fed continues to churn out trillions of new dollars, then we can expect the dollar index to tank, unless, that is, they can get these subservient vassal central bankers, who they are also flooding with dollars, such as the ECB and the BOJ, to do likewise. And that seems likely, given that they too are faced with a similar crisis. The key point, though, for precious metal investors, the real ones anyway, to take away is that no matter how the dollar performs relative to other currencies, money supply in all countries will be ballooning at a fantastic, literally unprecedented rate as they struggle to meet obligations and maintain liquidity, which means that measured against real money, which is gold, and of course silver too, they'll be cratering. On its 11-year chart, says Mond, we can see the dollar index has been in an erratic holding pattern for 5 years now, and the next stock market hit should see it again try to break out of the top of this pattern, unless it's swiftly countered by another tsunami of Fed largesse. The dollar, he notes, is often strong during market crash phases, which is one reason precious metals often drop hard during this phase, especially, folks, when you're talking the paper versions, before recovering quickly and then moving higher once the crash itself is over. Which brings me to a quick piece from Dave Kranzler entitled The COMEX, or the CRIMEX, and LBMA, which he calls, correctly, paper gold on steroids, and begins by noting, I thought I'd seen everything that was possible when it came to the creation of paper gold, when the COMEX rolled out their pledge gold category, which basically allowed the insolvent banks like HSBC and JP Morgan to use paper gold to satisfy performance bond requirements. In other words, renege on contracts. But now they've done themselves one better. It's called Accumulated Certificates of Exchange, or ACE facilities, which now facilitate the delivery of fractional parts of a gold bar. Yeah, the problem's obvious. But hey, ain't it clever? They can default and still get away with it. So where does that leave us? A fiat-based world economy and the biggest debt bubble in human history, absolutely destined to come apart at the seams. But we do need a scapegoat. After all, we can't blame the Fed. And isn't COVID-19 convenient? Why, if we don't let that crisis go to waste, we can build a police state, too. But maybe it's time for some counterpoint via a really interesting, thought-provoking piece courtesy of John Rappaport, a man that I've long admired. He writes via Lou Rockwell and others, including his own blog, which just happens to have been banned, removed from WordPress as a result of being evidently politically incorrect. Anyway, it's entitled, People Dying Equals Coronavirus. An engineered virus. Well, among other things, he says, this article comments on the hypothesis that the COVID-19 CCP virus, as some are now calling it, is a modified weaponized germ from a lab, either deliberately or accidentally released. Now, here he starts off with a generalized comment. When one weaponizes a virus, that's an instrument for causing widespread destruction. But the process faces a significant barrier, because from the get-go, viruses mutate very quickly as they replicate. Therefore, the criminals wouldn't necessarily be able to maintain the viral structure that they started with, so ensuring continued lethality would therefore appear to be impossible. But wait, then there's this. I fully understand, he says, that researchers in certain labs are always fiddling and diddling with viruses. That's their job, whether you like it or not. And the question is, in a given situation, are they being successful at weaponization, even ignoring the rapid mutation factor that he just mentioned? Now, here your host injects the comment that just maybe that's why they didn't go for maximum lethality, but maximum transmissibility. And that's particularly important, I'll suggest, if you're planning on a 1-2 punch and the second part of a binary weapon, who knows, perhaps already released. But there's a major difference, says Rappaport, between they tried to weaponize a coronavirus in labs and they succeeded and released it. Evidence for the former that they tried, no matter how convincing, and that part at least is obvious, is not necessarily evidence of the latter. In other words, that they released it, or that maybe somebody else released it and blamed them. Anything's possible, but so far, says Rappaport, what I see is this. When I add up all the reasons people are sick and dying, I don't see that it's the COVID-19 that is necessarily the basis. And here he goes into some detail. What I like about this piece is he doesn't just parrot the statistics that, oh, more people die from flu, for example, than the coronavirus. The key, of course, as he is going to point out, is how you manipulate the statistics. And if you've listened to me talk about what the Bureau of Lying Statistics has been doing when it comes to jobs data, inflation, and the like, you can see how relatively easy it is. It's even easier if a lot of people die and you get to pick what the cause of death is. So here we go. In past articles, says Rappaport, Chinese cases have been diagnosed for no other reason than that they have pneumonia, a traditional disease of major proportions in China. In no small part, folks, because they have a massive percentage of smokers. Studies estimate that roughly 300,000 citizens die of it every year, which means there are millions of Chinese people who develop pneumonia each year. And furthermore, the Chinese government quickly abandoned the idea of testing for the purported coronavirus, instead favoring CT scans of the lungs. But a finding of pneumonia was sufficient for a diagnosis of an epidemic case, which is absurd on its face. Pneumonia has many causes, none of which actually requires a new virus. And then we have what's going on in Italy, the second largest reservoir of the so-called epidemic. Here, the deaths occur massively on the side of the elderly, who've already got serious prior medical conditions long-term. In the reports issued by the Italian government so far, the people dying are said to have the virus. But the conclusion is not necessarily true that they're dying because of the virus. Maybe it's their prior medical condition. So the conventional wisdom often spouted is, quote, the coronavirus strikes the elderly who are less able than the young to ward it off, which is a misnomer deployed to cover up the reality that the elderly are passing away, as a lot of them usually do, from the illnesses they already have. Again, no need for a new virus. I've discussed also deaths in Australia, writes Rappaport, and the state of Washington. Again, it's primarily elderly people. As in Italy, add up the long-term diseases, the treatment of those diseases with toxic medical drugs. Uh-oh, can he say that? Maybe that's what got him banned. The fear engendered by the diagnosis of COVID, sudden isolation from family and friends, the use of breathing ventilators, which have their own set of adverse effects, including bacterial pneumonia, and new treatment with toxic antiviral drugs to fight the virus, and you have a terribly potent array of factors which account for the elderly dying. Again, no need for a new virus. And furthermore, other flu-like diseases, quite often with no evidence of an actual flu virus, are traditional in Europe and the U.S. Their symptoms overlap those listed for COVID, and in recent years, there have been such huge numbers of people with these flu-like illnesses, and many have died, before the emergence of the COVID-19 virus. So again, no need for anything new and unique. But as far as the global case numbers are concerned, a large percentage of these people have been diagnosed purely on the basis of their symptoms, with no test, or via the accepted diagnostic test, which is called PCR. And I'll get to that in a minute, he says. Suffice it to say, it fails to prove that illnesses stemming from the COVID virus, or any virus, are what's really causing the lethality. But it does create a picture of supposedly swelling case numbers. Here's the point that your host has made before, folks. If you call things a virus-related death that aren't, pneumonia and all kinds of similar stuff like Rappaport's pointing out here, you can inflate the numbers. On the other hand, as the Chinese seem to have been doing, if you call things that may or may not have been actually related to the virus deaths as anything else but, well, then you can correspondingly decrease the numbers. And ironically, no doubt about it, in China there were a whole lot of people who simply died because they'd been welded into their apartments, and they starved to death or panicked themselves to death. Now, here Rappaport goes even more politically incorrect. Then we have the unexplained, relatively small clusters of people who are suddenly falling ill. A closer examination of the data here and the people is necessary to see whether they, in fact, are, quote, sudden and unexplained. If they are, I would suggest investigating whether or not the rollout of the wonderful new, you gotta have it or else, because we're not gonna let you get away from it, 5G wireless technology, in particular at 60 gigahertz, like was reportedly rolled out in Wuhan, millimeter wavelengths, is occurring in those locales. It's possible, suggests Rappaport, and hey, here's another reason why they may have banned him, that 5G is causing oxygen deprivation, among other serious effects. Almost all of them, folks, pretty obvious at this point, including the military use of these millimeter wavelengths as a pain ray technology, and also they're known to break DNA chains. And yes, oxygen deprivation is at least one common denominator here. And rather than an engineered virus, which has unpredictable effects owing to its rapid mutation, if we're looking for sinister operations, I'd suggest that to cause sensational alarm and bafflement and proof that a mysterious event is underway, the intentional seeding of locales with little-known toxic chemicals would be the action undertaken. Now, that is an interesting point. And again, your host has suggested don't count out the use of binary weapons. Take something that's already in the environment, add a little something extra to it, and voila, you can create all kinds of sudden unexplained deaths, and pretty much, if you engineer the propaganda, make it look like whatever you want. Furthermore, in China, most of their major cities, like Wuhan, and Italy, particularly in the north, contain highly toxic air quality that's been a far more serious problem for quite a few years. This alone would account for huge numbers of people suffering from all sorts of lung conditions, including pneumonia, easily exacerbated, I'll note, by a virus. Pneumonia is one of the cardinal listed symptoms of the epidemic, and in China, the mix of toxic pollutants in the air is unprecedented in literally human history, spanning both early and modern areas of industrialization. So the conclusion to this part is, all in all, I'd have to say if a weaponized coronavirus has been achieved and then released or accidentally leaked, it's not really a success, because far too much of what's being called COVID is explained by the causative factors that he's just presented. Now, I'll note, folks, that if the idea was a virus to kill people, well, then it's not a success. But if the idea was a virus to panic people and cause them to put in place the police state that the deep state globalists and communists have been planning for a long, long time was the goal, well, then it's a smashing success. Now, in fact, says Rappaport, if you really want to talk about an engineered virus, including what would be probably an easier technical job in the lab, and by the way, folks, he's laying out here exactly what we have seen, the most successful operation would involve slightly altering a common coronavirus to cause nothing more than a common cold. Then, having the self-fulfilling prophecy of a diagnostic test in hand, you test people all over the world, they test positive. Surprise, surprise, surprise! And the case numbers would thus be created, and the non-virus illnesses causes that he's already talked about, you could create the illusion of a global pandemic, stitch it all together, and voila! Bring on the jackboots. Lockdowns, economic destruction, and further pacification of the dumbed-down sheeple. In other words, a bereft population more dependent than ever on governments and official authorities. A dazed population guided into a heavily technocratic future with wall-to-wall surveillance. Smart cities, the 5G Internet of Things, universal guaranteed income tiered to, what else, socialist credit score. And more importantly, assigned energy quotas for every citizen. In other words, total control. Sounds like a Bolshevik, communist Chinese, deep state, Babylon on the Potomac dream come true, doesn't it? From there, on we go to the so-called diagnostic test. The one in widespread use is called PCR, and it falls, he says, far short of proving that any person is sick or will get sick. He's proposed a vetting process in other articles for PCR, which should have been done decades ago, in order to show whether it works or not in the real world. And this vetting procedure would have been suggested by any college science student as obvious and necessary, but it's in fact never been carried out. It involves proving that the test can determine that a huge quantity of virus actively replicating in the human body is present, and therefore the patient would, in the real world, be sick. But carrying out such a test on hundreds of patients in a controlled and double-blind setting is part of the process of seeing whether the test does or does not actually point to sick people, and that has never been done. So claiming that the test confirms that COVID-19 is causing great damage is unsupported, which, by the way, is also quite convenient if a common coronavirus isn't really as booga 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 big of a threat as it's being made out to be, but still serves the purpose. Now, here, folks, I'll point out that your host has talked for a number of years about problems with testing. In other words, a test which works says that you have the virus when you do and that you don't have it when you don't. The trouble is, there are what are called alpha and beta errors. In one case, you say that somebody has it when they really don't, and in the other case, you say the opposite. And the problem is, those alpha and beta errors on the tests that we've seen are pretty big. Now, let's move on, says Rappaport, to the propaganda effects. People say patients are sick. They're dying all over the world. So it must be the virus. What else could it be? Answer? Yeah. If you understand that there's really an agenda here, and they don't want to let a perfectly good, even engineered crisis go to waste, there are all kinds of possibilities that spring to mind. And isn't it just oh so convenient that governments and big corporations and their public-private partners, where it gets hard to tell the difference, have been using the virus as a cover story now to obscure and explain away every single crime against various populations that they've been getting away with for decades and decades? Does that matter? Oh, and let's not forget previous so-called epidemics. For example, West Nile, SARS, Zika, swine flu, H1N1, the list goes on, all of which turned out to be unproven duds. But wait, at least there was some great beta test data that came out of them, right? So that when they finally got around to the, real thing, they knew exactly how the populace need to be spun and manipulated. Forewarned is forearmed, folks. Don't be fooled, because we're coming up on the biggest deception in at least the history of the formerly free United States.